Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I hope you enjoyed the podcast this week. Thanks for watching. This is our final day in Los Angeles. I'm very ready to go home to my couch to do the podcast, but also to play video games and take a nap. I love to nap on that couch. That's what you don't know. Where all those people sit down and talk to me, I nap. I put my face right where their butts were. But go to dansoder.com. We announced a bunch of new dates. This week, this Friday and Saturday, I'm going to be at the Omaha Funny Bone. 4 shows, bring in Sagalo. It's going to be unbelievable. Then if you live in Key West, Florida, June 1st and June 2nd, I'm going to be at Comedy Key West. It's unbelievable. The ticket link is up at dansoder.com. It's going to be just a Monday, Tuesday show, but I'm excited to come to Key West and hang out. Do this hour before we record it and also kind of fuck around. And then June 5th, New Jersey Performing Arts Center. There are limited tickets left. This is the last theater show before we record the Netflix special. DanSoder.com for all those dates. Go get your dates. Thank you for coming out to shows. They've been so fucking fun. Netflix is a joke was awesome. Thanks for coming to the movie watch along. That was unbelievable. This is you guys fucking rule, and I can't thank you enough. And I'll see you on the road. Do you like the Netflix is a joke festival being in LA?
It
becomes Frost Nixon.
I like not having to travel. I wish that they would do, they're slapping their name on everything. Yeah. And if you put your name on every show, then by definition, they're not special.
Yeah.
Like have less shows and really do the thing, do it. It'd be really cool to do a combination of, you have these great big names doing huge shows, and that's awesome. But as much light as you put on those, really give people the opportunity and make it seem like a special thing to hear names you have never heard before. Yeah. And you're going to get to see them here. And really push that. Like, that is what is always, because that always ends up being the exciting thing down the line when they look back and go,
yeah,
at the same night that person A was at the Hollywood Bowl, person B, who is now person A, was in front of 20 people. Like, that's always exciting.
I completely agree with you that you almost kind of become a part of comedy history, almost like a sports draft, where you're like, I went and drafted a show in the third round and it ended up becoming one of the biggest guys in the world.
That's a fucking great way to put it.
Yeah.
Think of it as a sports draft. I took a risk on
one of the smaller
ones, and it was amazing.
And I went and got this thing. I would say the way I would instantly fix Netflix as a joke festival is passes. That's what makes a festival. So buy a...
That's also great.
You get one A-level headliner. Then you get five B-level. You know what I mean? Make it a system where you're not just going to Chappelle and Shane and Nate. But you're going to Chappelle and then maybe an our show at the Improv, where you are seeing me and you for Absurd Ventures.
Exactly.
That way, no one has to shit blood about ticket sales.
Exactly.
The way that every single comic for this festival.
There were days where I was like, because I was originally going to do a show at the Wilshire Ebell, and then I looked at the other people, and I'm like, Can I just host something?
Yeah.
So I don't need to. And then so I hosted the Pee Wee's Playhouse 40th anniversary.
Great.
At the Greek, which was great. The pressure was off me. But part of me was like, are there people in a C-suite watching us fight gladiator fights?
Yes.
Like, who's going to get, because we're all scrambling. And also, we're doing it in this year where nobody has any money.
I know.
Everybody's broke.
And they just go, so what would you do? It's like, it's the food from Hook, where they're going imagine a budget.
Yes.
If you imagine a budget, then it appears. I will say what Netflix is a joke festival does better than any other comedy festival in existence is the amount of industry that is lurking everywhere.
Yeah.
It's just a industry fest where you turn around and it's guys in fleeces.
But it's not, here's what's here's what sets it apart from the Aspen Comedy Festival. It's industry.
Which, R.I.P. I wish I would have got to do.
The Aspen Comedy Festival, God bless them, it really was more of a, oh, our execs get to have a ski trip.
That's
and the comedy was almost like the third thing on the menu.
Did you, when you were doing that festival, could you, because I mean, I'm joking that about the industry. There are, it's just shows and then there's people who are there. So this is a fun festival for shows.
But this is a better, this is a way better industry showcase.
Yeah.
Because the industry's home.
And they're comfortable.
They're comfortable and they're like, oh, I'll go see some shows. And.
But my question to you is, when you were doing Aspen.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's like a certain like shine and glittery when you go to a festival and you're figuring it out. How quickly did you put together the, like, this is a fucking ski trip for HBO execs?
Oh, that didn't like take long at all. But what was great was we all knew that. So the comedians themselves were like, well, let's make this a party for ourselves.
That's
so
I wanted to know.
So the all night partying that went on, especially up in the oxygen deprived atmosphere.
Oh.
So people, I remember I walked back from a show with Chris Farley.
Okay.
This was like 2 a.m. in Aspen and it's just freezing cold and everyone's hammered and people are coming out of bars and they're seeing Chris. And it's like walking down the street with a Pope because, oh my God, it's Chris Farley. And he's grabbing people and throwing them into the snow and people are buying him drinks. And so like it became this weird mobile party going down the streets of Aspen.
That's just incredible.
Yeah, it was gorgeous. So
almost like they were getting mauled by a party yeti. Like they'd come out and he'd be like,
party yeti.
He'd be like, like the same excitement of seeing a yeti. It's because it's Chris
Farley.
Throw
me in the snowbank. And also these, again, it's all super rich, coked out Aspen residents.
So they go, oh my God, I've seen you before. Toss me.
Right.
I won't press charges.
And I'm so drunk, none of my nerve endings are sending any pain signals. So this is the time to do it.
Oh, what
so he
a
was
delight.
Just throwing people into fire hydrants and stuff. It was amazing.
Yeah, that has got to be very fun. What is, as a someone that grew up in Colorado, was a Colorado resident.
You did?
Yeah, I grew up in Aurora, Colorado.
Okay.
The altitude thing's very funny because it affects
hilarious.
People in ways that will make a white guy that is perma in denim feel like a Sherpa in Nepal.
Yes.
Where the way that you help people, where you're like, this man needs water.
Yes.
This man needs a place to lay down.
This man is dizzy. I've seen the signs.
You know,
he's in the early stages. Well, because the residents, they've adjusted to the oxygen.
Well, you have the barrel chest.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
What they say. They say if you develop in Colorado, your rib cage actually is wider so that your lungs can expand more to take more oxygen in. I think it's called a Colorado barrel chest, but I know it's also called just a barrel chest.
Oh, because a Colorado barrel chest is a different thing where I come from.
That's a sex
it
move.
It will cost $75. and
she goes, and I won't do it without someone in the room.
And it involves at least two divorcees. It doesn't matter male or female. That's but they have to be divorced for some reason.
But it
Colorado
does. But
barrel chest.
It does really feel like.
What's where the Olympians train?
Yeah, in Colorado Springs.
Yeah,
so
man.
When I would have friends visit me, or like when I would bring like a girl I was dating from New York, mm-hmm. and we would go back to Colorado to meet my family or whatever, I would always be like, hey, number one, my family, my mom's family's very fun.
Yeah.
They're very fun. You're going to want to drink with them.
Don't.
I'm telling you right now. It was mm-hmm. like, I couldn't have given more of a crossing the river into a jungle country speech to these people where I go, it will get dangerous. I will be there for you, but there's not much I can do after a certain point.
Yeah.
And then they start drinking and you go, you're gone.
We're
you're
done. Yeah. I had one too many one night at a show in Aspen and it was, it was one of the few times where I just admitted on stage, like, yeah, I can't hide how drunk I am right now. I wasn't drinking my normal amount to get me drunk, but I'm in Colorado,
yeah.
So it takes less, and I didn't factor that in.
Yeah.
And so there was just this, oh, yeah, you know, I drank too much, guys. I'm sorry,
man, admitting that on stage for people who don't do comedy, you have to understand it's like you're telling your boss you're drunk. That's the equivalent of you working at an office.
Really, I know you paid money, but I didn't really show up for work today. I'm not really.
If you just went into his office and you go, can I tell you something right now? I didn't adjust to this altitude of the office, and I'm pretty fucked up right now. I don't know if this meeting's going to go good.
He might not want me on the forklift this afternoon.
He might not want me to meet
probably the best idea.
I know the Swiss buyers are here. I would not put me in the room with them. I'm gonna want to ask him for chocolate. Exactly. I'm drunk and I really want chocolate.
Okay, Swiss. I was in Amsterdam. My first time in Amsterdam.
Yeah
baby. Yeah. And I went to a coffee shop. I went to a lot of coffee shops to get stoned during the day.
Yeah, hell yeah. But shout out the Bulldog Cafe.
The Abraxas Cafe for me.
Yeah.
And shout out to Lucky Mothers, which was recommended to me by David Cross.
Awesome.
He was like, go to Lucky Mothers. And they were one of the last, this is in the late 90s, they were one of the last places that would put weed in food.
Okay.
They were like, we can roll you a joint, make you tea, or we put it in food for you. Put it in a candy bar or a cookie. And I went, yeah, put it in a candy bar. So they gave me a Snickers bar.
Okay.
Which they sliced the top off, put all the marijuana, put the thing, shape the chocolate back on, and just a Snickers bar full of weed.
Great.
Now, I didn't know you're supposed to nibble that over the course of a week.
Oh, it's a dosage.
It's a ding, ding, ding.
It's so like getting pills from a pharmacy and just going, I'll just take
so I should
thing.
Take the whole bottle?
They go, absolutely not.
So
please don't do that.
I walked around the rest of the day, and I finished my Snickers bar, and then I had a show that night. And here's what was weird. I could do my material. I was not slurring. I could speak perfectly fine. I could not physically open my eyes.
No way.
So I did my set. I was like, guys, and I was like, listen, I went to Lucky Mother's and I bought a Snickers bar and I ate the whole thing. And I should not have.
Yeah.
And I can't open my eyes right now. I'd love to do my material for you. And the audience reaction was like, oh yeah, we've seen this.
Yeah.
Like American, they came over, they ate the whole bar.
They probably have a goofy Dutch word for it. Like you like did an Oopenstugan. Like, oh, you Oopenstugan. Yeah, that's the noise.
Oopenstugan.
The Oopenstugan's the noise.
Whenever they see that, they have to drink. Oh, Oopenstugan.
Oopenstugan. I had a train conductor. This happened too, I know. And you're the guy was running a train.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is.
I could not open my eyes.
Did you? Now, here's my question in that moment.
Yeah.
Did you go for the sunglasses? Please, does anybody have a sunglasses?
No. No, I wanted to own it. That was a point where I was really coming into be completely honest on stage, even when it's embarrassing as shit. Like, absolutely say whatever you're doing.
I'm hitting that stage right
now.
Yeah,
when you're just like, oh, fuck. I did a set last night at the last bookstore, another Netflix with a joke store.
And
a joke
it's show. Just, it's, yeah.
And it was, and by the way, place was fucking to the walls packed.
That's
it
awesome.
Was amazing. And I did a joke that is on my new special. This is, by the way, I know you've experienced this. This is going to make you cinch up when I say it. I have this joke, recorded it onto my special. It's the special's coming out. It's recorded. Did it last night. In the moment, thought of a whole new better tag for it. A whole new better punchline.
So he's one of my producers on my upcoming Netflix special. There's two bits that I fucking know.
Yep.
The second I record them at the Throckmorton, the second the shows are over at the Throckmorton, and I go do a random show.
Yep.
I'm going to figure out the thing I've been trying to figure out.
I did last night.
Oh, that makes me angry for you.
And I stopped and said, my special is coming out on June 9th, and I'm letting you know, you just heard a punchline to a bit. It will not be that funny on the special because I didn't think of it till just fucking now.
Yeah.
And then I got so angry, I said, now, out of anger, I will never do that punchline again. You are the only people to fucking hear
That's pretty cool.
Like, I'm just giving it to you.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it like, that's...
I don't know. That is proof to me that there is an intelligence higher than us that enjoys watching us have moments like that.
Yes.
Because you go, every time.
And by the way, it
every
is
time I
every
record
time I've recorded an album or special, and then I tour on it until it comes out. Because you can tour it for a couple months.
Yeah.
At least three new punchlines where I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
So this is something when I'm you know, obviously you still tour after you tape, and then you get tags, and then sometimes you get new ideas from bits, and then you're like, well, I can't because I just did that whole bit. But a feeling that I'm looking forward to is I love my closer.
Mm-hmm.
It's very personal. I like it. I'm so ready to be done doing it. I mean, I am ready for a conscious uncoupling from this closer. Like, I don't want a bad divorce. It's not going to be messy. I appreciate everything it's done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just ready to like...
Amicable. Go on your way. I'll always love you.
I will leave you in the mists of Mill Valley. I will not...
The mists of Mill Valley.
I will not see you.
Oh my God. You're leaving it beyond the Rainbow Tunnel.
That's what it is.
It is beyond... Hey, what... What happened to that bit you did? It's beyond.
It's beyond. You must go through the Robin Williams tunnel. I'll tell you. My first time driving back through Marin after Robin Williams had died, and they because I always knew that tunnel when I was a kid. It always, you know, you've known it. You were in San Francisco in the 90s.
Early 90s, yeah.
That rainbow was always there.
Always.
The rainbow was always over the bridge north of San Francisco, just past Sausalito. And when I was driving up to my grandmother's house, and I took that corner off the bridge, and it said the Robin Williams Tunnel, it was like someone fucking punched me in the chest. I was driving through a tunnel being like, bah! Like it just,
he's fucking ripped me up. Yeah, he's one of those guys that every now and then you go like, oh, wait, he's dead?
Yeah, that does
Why
suck.
Why is he gone?
It really does suck.
What the fuck did he do? Yeah,
and it was also like, you knew that was such a big loss because people don't make a big enough deal of this at the time, but Robin Williams died in 2014.
Yep.
Or 2014. And ISIS made a statement. Do you remember that?
No.
Mike, can you look
ISIS?
It up? ISIS, and by the way, we're talking about ISIS at its peak. We're talking about Zeppelin 4 ISIS. We're talking about Stone 72 fucking ISIS. Like they're at the peak of their ISIS, and they literally, their PR guy, whoever the PR guy is, it always reminds me of Michelle Wolf's joke about ISIS, about there's a guy that makes the flag in ISIS.
Yeah, and it's that's like, right.
But there's also a PR guy, and he released a statement. You found it? Dude,
it's real.
It's real. It's 100% real. Hey guys, Cash App just released a new status program for the way people actually spend called Cash App Green. It unlocks new ways for you to pay, get rewarded, and easily grow or manage your money on your terms. Now, when you spend at least $500 a month with the Cash App card or Cash App Pay, you earn green status. Cha-ching, which unlocks benefits like up to $200 off free overdraft coverage, which who doesn't want that? Higher borrower limits, and custom personalized cash back offers every Friday at places you love to shop. For a limited time, new Cash App customers can earn $10 if they use the code CASHAPP10 in their profile at signup and send $5 to a friend within 14 days. Terms apply. Cash App is a financial service platform, not a bank. Banking services provided by Cash App's bank partners. Prepaid debit cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC. Cash App Green, overdraft free. Borrow cash back offers and promotions provided by Cash App, a Block Incorporated brand. Visit cash.app/legal/podcast for full disclosure. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Listen, this world is tough to live in. You have a human brain and there is the internet. You are going to go through it. Probably want to talk to somebody, because when you talk to somebody, what they can do is tell you what you're thinking, how you're feeling, and maybe how to do it better, or maybe how to think about your thoughts better. I don't know. I'm just saying therapy has really helped me, and it could probably help you, and you don't have to be on this journey alone. Find support and have someone with you in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/soder. That's better, H-E-L-P. .com/soder. The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. So following the death of actor and comedian Robin Williams in August of 2014, several individuals identifying as ISIS militants or supporters on Twitter at times made statements. Some militants shared a fondness for his work, with one user calling themselves a Juman Jihadi. And that's got to be fake.
That's fake.
That's fake.
Yeah.
But I you do know what? Remember
can I
seeing...
say something? I think that was probably Jim Norton.
Yeah.
Feels like probably Jim Norton doing funny. That. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He does that. Yeah.
But by the way, I'm sure there were guys like, America should burn and the ashes should be salted forever. But the genie in Aladdin is so delightful.
But
please.
Mrs. Doubtfire,
when the breasts are on, when they cut the fire. But when the breasts are on,
hello.
They he should not be in a dress. Man, why is he in a dress? He's a man. He's great.
So just recently, embarrassingly, we're talking about all things that are embarrassing. Yeah. I have really learned how psychologically tied and tormented I am by the movie Mrs. Doubtfire.
Really?
It was on. Uh-huh. We pay for the pay channels. We got HBO. We got Showtime.
I spend.
That's right. I spend the money.
Listen, I got a Netflix special now. I can afford some streaming.
Listen, I got to see what's going on out there. I got to keep my thumb on the market. But Mrs. Doubtfire was on because it was just like I will doom scroll and I will watch like BBC News and get like a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. But now what I'm doing is I'm putting on the movie channels just as background noise and I'm stopping. Mm-hmm. I watched like Meteor Man the other day.
Meteor Man is a weirdly underrated movie. Weirdly underrated. It's actually kind of a really funny riff on superheroes.
Yes.
Robert Townsend doesn't get the flowers he deserves.
Robert Townsend did a black superhero movie that holds up pretty fucking great.
Pretty fucking good.
And I had a good time watching Meteor Man.
Yep.
But then something rolled into Mrs. Doubtfire, and Katie came home from work, and mm-hmm. she just noticed how much of a lock this movie had on me.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've been starting to realize I loved that movie. My dad was from the Bay Area. My dad always, you know, Robin Williams was a hero. His name was Daniel. There's just a lot of connections.
Okay.
He fought to be in his kid's life. Yes. That's the whole underlying point of the movie, is he'll do anything to be with his kids. Watching that as someone whose dad had zero interest being with his kids.
Oh,
I did not realize why I liked that movie so much.
Yeah.
And I'm uncovering it in a way that is very uncomfortable with my fiance watching me watch it. And she goes, oh, this movie fucked you up. And I was like,
Yeah.
Because you go, I didn't know. That's why I liked it.
It is weird as you get older and then you look at something that you were growing up on that you liked for this one reason. You see it again and go, oh no, there's a whole other thing that had me. I didn't realize it.
Such a sadder reason.
Yeah.
I thought I liked it because he did voices and it was Robin Williams.
Yes. But then you watch it when you're like, there's way more.
He cared about his children.
Yeah.
So much so.
Again, yes, it's a very popular movie. It's, you know, one of the all-time families love to watch it. But there is a weirdly dark, complex, like, he is a fuck-up as a husband.
He's a horrible husband.
And a fuck-up as a provider, but loves his kids anyway. And so it's like, how do I do this?
My dad had all, like, Robin Williams, you know, horrible husband, horrible provider, could be a horrible father, but he's not. My dad hit all three of those.
We hit
the parlay on my dad.
But on that
one, the one that didn't hit was that he cared so much about his kids that he's willing to, and I will say this, deceive everybody. It's such a movie where you go, how did they pull this off?
Because this
could look real bad.
And there's cut scenes that you can find on YouTube where it was originally a much darker film.
See? But
all that darkness is now underneath it. They just didn't put it in there blatantly.
Yeah.
Because Robin was, I mean, you know, I wasn't friends with him, but we hung out a lot, especially like in his final years. We kept running into each other at Meltdown on Sunset because he's
awesome.
A big comic book guy.
Yeah.
So every Wednesday.
Was he really?
Oh, yeah. And then we would call each other and go, okay, what are you reading? Well, I just picked up this guy, Robert Kirk. He turned me on to a writer named Robert Kirkman. He goes, anything you see Robert Kirkman's name on, you grab it and start reading it.
Would it be weird when you're like talking about like Planet Hulk and he's like, oh, but then he fights. Would he do like Robin stuff?
Yeah.
Or would he be like, oh, and you think Thor's not going to make it out? But Son of Scar, he's pretty good. Red Hulk, oh.
The thing that always... there's so many tragedies to Robin Williams not being here, but one was that, you know, when you would hang out with him, he would do a little bit of the Robin stuff, and then he would just talk about his life and how insane his career was, and he never got to do like an amazing one-man show where he just talked about, because his stories were so fascinating, and he was such a, not just brilliant storyteller, but way to tell a story and then give you an insight into it where he's like, I know that I approached the story this way.
Yeah.
And then it took me, like we were just saying about Miss Doubtfire, and then I looking at it this way, and you're like, fuck that trip. And he never got to do that.
Yeah,
and
that would have been.
Why didn't he get to do that?
I think everyone, you know, we were joking around. Me and DeRosa were joking around this about last night. Like, he was talking about Regan. And he was like, yeah. He was like, Regan, do one final thing where you just like, Joe DeRosa said, he was like, he told Regan, he was like, just do a special called Cunt. And just like. Just like, dude, like, it was so fun. I love DeRosa. But we were also saying that about.
I'm sorry. You just. I just had a visual. Think of the Netflix save screen.
Yeah.
It's the word. Yeah. But it's still Brian doing his Brian Regan face.
But he's, like,
face.
But he's like, doing the doofus face where he's like, duh. And it's like just. But like, we were talking about that with Nate Bargatze. Like, mm-hmm. just set it on fire on your last one. Yeah. And that would be Robin Williams just going like. All right, here's really what happened on Mork and Mindy.
Yeah.
And here's what happened on Cadillac Man.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, and I wasn't happy about Awakenings because De Niro was a prick. And you're like, I would love to hear. Yeah,
or
you're
just
right.
We even, were... like the stories he would tell me about making Popeye.
Crazy, when they're so coked out of their mind.
Well, first off, if you have you rewatched Popeye?
No.
Okay, go rewatch Popeye.
We might have to do that as another watch along.
Yeah. It is a sneak remake of McCabe and Mrs. Miller, his earlier Robert Altman movie, to the point where they go to, when they go to the betting track, there's a little red light whorehouse.
Sure.
And there's a woman with red curly hair lying on like one of those opium beds looking at a piece of stained glass, which is the final shot of McCabe and Mrs. Miller. They put
really?
That in there in the movie. And he said, we're on the island of Malta, which is gorgeous. And, but they had very, very strict, import laws. We couldn't get cocaine in there. And our producer was Robert Evans. Robert Evans. One time I got Harry Nielsen and Robin Williams and Robert Altman to do Popeye. Was I crazy? I was.
Robert,
like a fox. So
whoever played Robert Evans in that show about making The Godfather?
Yeah, who did that?
Can
that
you
was,
look that up? It's the Miles Teller show about, what is it called? Like not the
Bargain?
The yeah, look, we'll get
the Offer.
It might be called The Offer.
Okay,
it might be called The Offer. It is The Offer. That all show right. is fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah.
But the guy that plays Robert Evans,
who played Robert Evans?
If we look it up, he was fucking Matthew Good.
Matthew
played
Good.
Robert Evans.
Listen, Matthew was good, but was he great? No one can be Robert Evans.
No
me.
One, baby.
No one, baby.
Hey,
no
we're gonna get coke. We need to get coke to Malta.
Well. So Robin said they couldn't, they were having trouble getting cocaine in. And then suddenly every Friday, three like insanely hot Slovenian models would show up. And then they would go into the restroom and they would come out and then there'd be cocaine for
That's
everyone.
So cool.
So Robert Evans would like get them to, you know.
Whoa.
And then the custom guys were like, bellissima, yeah. Hey, and they wouldn't bother them. And then they would go, that's how they got the cocaine.
Can I tell you right now?
By the way, that's a movie in itself.
Yeah.
Make that movie. Holy shit.
Can I also tell you, it makes me yearn for a simpler time where beautiful women could trick men of authority by doing like under the chin and then smuggle in
Ooh,
a kilo
silver.
Of cocaine in Ooh, their pussy. Like,
yeah.
Is by going like under the nice. Chin of a guy where he goes, oh, like that. You're like, malissimo, yeah. Please come to Malta.
You're right,
and
right.
And then they're like, funk. And they go, there you go, Evans. I got your hey, brick
let
in.
Let me open this balloon up.
yeah. That was.
Yeah.
Because I only met Robin Williams once. And he was very quiet. It was at the Comedy Cellar.
He was. He when he wasn't on, he was conserving his energy. And
like Gilbert Godfrey. It was very similar.
Yes. Gilbert was the same way. Yeah. I mean, although every time I ever hung out with Gilbert, we were yakking about old movies and Bela Lugosi. So I never really saw him calm because we were just such movie nerds.
I would watch him almost get like activated at the Cellar.
Oh, yeah.
Where he would just be like sitting there and he'd be like, oh. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Gilbert, you have to go on, and then you'd be like, why is it that I can't? But it was like 0 to 1,000. It's like the sand flats.
You flip the switch.
Yeah, but it was like one of those cars on the sand flats
Hang
where
on.
They would be like, he'd be like, I always remember this is specifically what I always do. Mm-hmm. And everyone will talk about Gilbert Godfrey always wanted to take home food.
Yes, he did.
So when you were
well,
Comedy Cellar.
Food. Utensils.
Anything.
Yeah.
So him and his lovely wife would be at the Comedy Cellar, and they would always be talking to a waitress. Mm-hmm. And this was always before his set, and he'd be like, yeah, please, Can I get that to go? And they'd give him like the one of those plastic bags with like five to-go things.
Oh, my God.
And then he would just go down those stairs and he would go up and he would just immediately, you could sit in the stairs and hear it like a fucking siren go off. He'd be like, I'm standing here wondering why. When I used to listen to him, that's when I started doing Michelle Wolf as Gilbert Godfrey.
Oh.
She was like, I don't understand. Why am I? It's very close. It's very similar.
It is very. Okay.
Yeah. Right. I do Michelle Wolf going, I have red hair and I love to run. What am I doing? Am I fast?
What? Okay. I hate to take this conversation in a
do
weird
it any way you want, dude.
You were talking earlier and then I cut you off and we never got back to it.
Yeah.
About your new special, you have this closing bit that you'll be very, very happy to be, because we're talking about when you think of a new thing.
Sure.
And you were about to say something about, because I also have a closing bit that I'm very secure knowing I can always close my show on it, but I have to let it go because yes. I got to do something new.
It's a binky. It's
yes,
a binky.
I
will tell you right now, when I was building this hour, I had that first, and there's like, for any young comics watching, I would give the advice of get your closer first.
Figure out where it's
gonna go. Because you almost go, I would hit 35 minutes. Mm-hmm. I knew my closer was 20 minutes. So I would go like, mm-hmm. it would hit that 35 minutes. Even if I was struggling. Even if the show was like, I'm trying jokes and they're not really working and I'm at the funny bone.
I can always land on this.
I hit that 35 minute mark and I go like,
here we go.
And you would just go like, it felt like a parachute. Like you'd throw it and be like, all right, we're going to land safely on this. Mm-hmm. But then now it's like, I really am doing like a, almost like a sitcom final episode, like running my hand along it, being like, we went through a lot of shit, baby.
Yeah.
But this is it. This
Remember
is the
that
last.
Time we were locked in that vault?
Yeah. It's just me being like, oh, that show in Portland, Maine really wasn't going well. And then you bailed me out, brother.
But, so, you know, do they know what the release date of the special is going to be? So you don't know that yet.
This is one of those leasing ones where we're just making it. And
and then they'll, okay, all right.
So it's like a Netflix special. One of the, you know, the people at Netflix are great. They've been great to work with. But one of them texted me and they were like, we're so excited to do this. And I was just not in the right mood. And I texted back, yeah, I'm excited for you to borrow my special for 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just no response after that.
What if you had written back, who's we?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
But there really is like, they, you know, it's cool and I'm excited for people to see it. But I'm very excited to tape a special in the Bay Area. And because I feel like this is the last time in the Throckmorton.
Also, the Throckmorton is such a gorgeous theater.
It's so cool. Like very Northern California.
My new special was the first one that I taped in an actual comedy club.
Where'd you tape it?
I taped it at Comedy on State in Madison, Wisconsin, which I did it like a year and a half ago. It is a cheat code. That
Comedy Works in Denver are cheat codes.
Is ridiculous. You know what it reminds me of? No, not the Comedy Works. The Comedy on State in Madison, Wisconsin.
No, I'm saying both of those clubs.
Oh, both of those, yeah.
They're equal in cheat codes.
They remind me of back in the 80s, the two clubs. Remember, you're young. You don't remember this. We would send out videotapes of ourselves.
Oh!
And the club that you mailed it, they had a VCR.
Oh!
And they would put your tape in the...
Okay, and it's getting late now.
That's how you, yeah. Are you enjoying your peas, Patton?
We're the first example of podcast sundowning.
Yes, sir. Oh, my God.
There we go.
But you would, you would
was
mail.
Was Judy Tenuta there?
With her. But we would mail our videotapes out, and the two places they wouldn't take videotapes from were Charlie Goodnights in Raleigh and the Ice House, because those were also cheat codes back then.
Okay, so they knew.
They're just like, this is not an indicator of how good or bad you are.
Buddy, you could fart on stage and get a standing ovation.
You kind of could.
Really?
Especially at Charlie Goodnights. It was ridiculous how good it was.
When I started comedy, it was right when everyone went from tapes to DVDs.
Yep.
And I was starting in comedy, but I was an open micer, so I didn't have a tape or anything.
Right.
But I remember the club, I started in Tucson at Laughs. I would work other clubs around there or whatever. And I remember the owners being like, they're old. They were like old club owners. Mm-hmm. And they'd go like this, believe they want us to take these DVDs? Like, they're like, what is this? I got to buy a laser disc?
Yeah, I got to buy a whole new machine? What am I?
That's they're like, you send a tape, and you get the tape. But I was at the ass end of the VHS.
Okay.
I was in the beginning where people were
in
like,
the weird,
if you had a camcorder that could make DVDs, you were like, you were king. People were like, please take my set.
Right.
My first weekend that I emceed at Laughs is on a mini DVD. It's all one of the ones they had to put in the bigger one.
Mm.
Do you remember those?
Yes.
Yeah.
Holy Jesus.
That piece of technology.
You're truly transitioning. Yes. Yeah, that was...
Like, that little thing that you would drop the mini DVD in and you could put it in, that's what I have one of my first like weekends on. Factor Meals, baby. It's starting to become hot. You're going to want some summer meals. You maybe want to start losing some weight. I got it. I could lose 8 pounds. So I'm looking at... I know that's very specific, but that's just what I want to lose as for my walk around weight at 42. I'm like, I need to get down to about 210, 212, and I'll feel good. But that's why you got to go get like, well, how am I going to eat healthy? Boom. Factor Meals has got you covered. They can build meals around your goals, whether it's weight loss, overall nutrition, more protein, GLP-1 support for strength and workout recovery, anything you need, bam. Factor Meals is going to help you take care of. And you could try the newly launched ready-to-eat salads with vibrant ingredients like elote corn and edamame, plus 70-plus add-ons to round out your nutrition from green juices to peanut butter energy bites. They got it all. Head to factormeals.com/soder50off. Use the code soder50off to get 50% off and free daily greens per box with new subscriptions only. While supplies last, until September 27th, 2026. See website for more details.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
I have like, I have a closet full of CDs of shows, early shows. And this is kind of a brag, but my alma mater is, they go, we want your archives. Like, send us all your stuff. We will build an archive of all your things.
So
I'm going to send them all my raw CDs and they're going to catalog them. And so I'm like, damn,
Before you do that, I would ask, just because I always love like finding out more stuff about comics that have been around longer, because I think like what you said about the stuff about admitting your faults or whatever.
Yeah.
Man, if I would have learned that in my 20s, I would have been such a better comic, because it's so hard to learn.
Yeah, but I think what I'm glad is there's documentation. My first HBO half hour and a lot of these early CDs.
Yeah, dude, Piss Drinkers Inc.?
Even before that, and also after that. But what I'm saying is, there's also documentation of me before I was comfortable enough to be vulnerable on stage. And there's early versions of me where I'm still in that, let me tell you how it is.
Yeah.
And I'm awesome and I'm brilliant. It's like when you watch, there's really early, I'm not comparing myself to Richard Pryor, but there's early Richard Pryor where he's trying to be Bill Cosby. Richard Pryor.
You can watch.
And you can see the transition starting to happen.
I think it's not the Dick Cavett show. It's earlier than that, but.
Way earlier.
There's way earlier. There's like a Pryor on.
Might have been Jack Parr.
Yes. And he comes out and he is just doing Cosby.
Absolutely.
He's
doing
just
Cosby.
Doing Cosby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is, if you ever can read the book Pryor Convictions, the autobiography of Richard Pryor, which he wrote before he died, the scene about him going to Berkeley and wearing the dashiki, doing acid and then cussing. And then what's crazy is what they have documented is you can watch Richard Pryor live and smoking, which he recorded at the Improv. In New York City, and he fucking bombs.
He bombs.
He starts talking about sucking dick and it being addictive.
They showed it at the American Cinematheque, and it's the one. And they even show a tiny clip of it at the beginning of Live in Concert when all the balloons are on stage.
Yes.
And he riffs something with the audience, and that actually gets laughs. But the audience, they are not ready for it.
And
they're not digging it.
And it's
when
crazy
he does
to
the
watch.
Junkie thing, and he starts he starts weaving back before he goes, I'm sick. And the audience is just dead. Like, they what did, are we looking at?
They did not want it.
No.
You see, because then you watch 78, you know, live in concert, which is like one of the greatest hours of all time, which amazing. Also he's being heckled the entire time.
People everyone's yelling. Yeah.
Screaming at him. And he's doing these bits about his dad dying of a heart attack while fucking. And people are just fucking screaming at him. It's wild. And he stayed in the pocket and killed it. But I think the thing is like the question I had about getting older is, so you have all this archive.
Yeah.
Is there a part of you that before you send it to your alma mater wants mm-hmm. to listen to go, oh, I never did anything with that bit, but now I'm a much stronger comic. I can take that premise. Young Patton thought it was a good premise. Maybe older Patton can.
I remember Stephen King saying something about, he goes, I don't keep a notebook because if I get an idea and then it just stays with me and eats at me, and then I know that's an idea to pursue. And if it doesn't stay with me, it means it probably wasn't that important. And if there was a bit that I just could not or didn't follow up on, I mean, yeah, actually, I mean, I should listen to them.
I just wonder if like the thing we were talking about you tape a special and all of a sudden you figure it out. Well, there also has to probably be some that you never figured out. That you put down out of frustration.
Yeah.
And then, you know what I mean? You walk by as a vet now and you pick it up mm-hmm. and you go, oh shit, that's how that goes.
Fuck.
Because I do that, now I gotta, do that you with know my what? Old notebooks.
Well, they're digit. Yeah, I have so many notebooks.
So maybe do that. Like, go through the notebooks.
Yeah.
Because it is cool where you go, that's actually not a bad premise, 22-year-old Dan.
They're digitizing all that for me right now. So once I get it all, because I mean, it's just like,
oh yeah,
hundreds of CDs that's of stuff incredible. Being recorded off of soundboards and clubs like, hey, do you want this? I'm like, yeah. And I just took it and threw it in a closet.
Great.
And but now I have it, so I'll go through it. And yeah, and I have so many fucking notebooks, so I can go through those. And you know,
that's always what I thought was great about stand-up is like nothing is ever really dead until you record it.
Yeah.
And then you just go like, oh fuck, I completely forgot.
And as we've learned, sometimes even when you record it, it's not dead. Yeah. Because then a month later you're like,
hand comes out of the ground. And you're like,
son of a bitch, it's still alive. Has this ever happened? You have a bit and you got it all worked out and you fucking record it on a special, on an album.
Yeah.
And then you realize, oh, the whole first 3 minutes I could leave out and it's even tighter. But I don't even need the whole fucking preamble for it.
The reason I'm pointing at him is when I did my YouTube special, mm-hmm. I did an hour in Portland Helium, one of the greatest clubs.
Oh, that's a great club.
And that's a cheat code.
Yeah, that's another
and
cheat code.
We film it and we're in my living room editing it and we just went like, I don't think we need that first 15 minutes at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut it and we put it out. And then like the first response was like, this is fucking airtight. And you're like, well, it had a bunch of air in it. It had 15 minutes of fucking burps and farts that we cut out of it. But yeah, it's like, that's always to me the fun part of the editing thing is like taking away stuff from it and being like, you don't need that. You don't need that at all. You don't
get right
need
there.
That. And it's also like, I wish more things did that. Like mm-hmm. companies and, you know, whether like car companies and shit, just make things better. I feel like we're in a weird stage because I don't know. This disclosure.
Well, we're in shitification right now where we're adding too much.
Yes.
You know, like your car, it's almost like my car dealership needs to have its own version of a Genius Bar where I can bring and they teach me what all the buttons do. Like, I don't need all this shit.
Just run.
Yeah, please just run, turn it on and go.
I want to have easy GPS. Shit. But that's what's interesting right now is like we're not efficient at making stuff as much as we used to be.
No.
And now there's also stuff coming out where you're like, and there's aliens might be real. Like where this is when it's happening. Like when we're inefficient and when we're just like.
Yeah.
Because it keeps going like other people keep going like disclosure and the Spielberg movie happens to be coming out
mm-hmm.
with like every. I don't know if I'm being marketed to or if there's otherworldly beings. That's what I'm trying to say.
Or are they trying to ramp us up toward it so that there's not mass panic? Are they trying to ease us into it and.
Which is like,
and by the way, listen, I rewatched Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which probably one of the best movies of the 70s.
So they're saying that this movie, Disclosure Day, that comes out in June, is an answer to that.
Well, okay,
that's what I heard. I don't know if that's true.
This is going to sound very kind of this is going to sound, I hope this doesn't sound evil, but it, the whole section of the movie where they are trying to, they show the government dirty tricks guys going, sure. Okay, we got to think of a thing. It's a gas leak.
Yeah.
And we got to scare people yeah. off. And they got the Piggly Wiggly trucks and they're hiding everything. And you're like, then from when that movie came out, based on how we have reacted to COVID and trans people and yeah. anything new and the panics that it's caused, I'm like, I think the government was right to keep that shit from, like, we're clearly as a species, we can't handle shit.
So
we cannot handle
this
anything.
This is an excellent point that I, this is the only time I can make this point. I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
Because I am a child of the 80s and 90s. I grew up with hyper violent action movies.
Oh,
I,
yeah.
I mean,
oh,
I grew up
crazy,
obsessed with Rambo, Commando, mm-hmm. Schwarzenegger and Stallone, mm-hmm. anything they did. I mean, B-movies, anything I could see where there was hyper-violence.
All the rip-offs, want to see them.
All I want to
yeah,
see.
Yeah, yeah.
All the JCVD.
The Eradicators.
I love them. Yeah. I love RoboCop 1, mm-hmm. 2, and 3.
Yeah.
I love the whole franchise.
Yeah.
It's all, they're all that my, shit.
I love them equally. Don't ask me to choose.
I won't. I won't. Just like I won't choose my Rambos.
Nope.
I know First Blood is an actual movie, but three yeah. they teach the Taliban to fight the Russians.
Oh.
That aged horribly.
Yeah.
Where you watch Rambo literally train
and
Al Qaeda.
And I'm not joking.
That's in Rambo 3.
And the end title is, this movie is dedicated to the brave fighters of the Mujahideen.
Who took down the yeah. buildings.
Thank you, Osama. Yeah. Say, and then there's a James Bond movie where he teams up with a Mujahideen.
That's what I mean.
One of the Timothy Dalton ones. You're like, okay.
Yeah, he's like,
yeah.
The only thing better than getting pushy is teaching terrorists how to fight. And you're like, oh, I don't remember that one in James Bond. But
yeah.
I'm a child of hating Tipper Gore.
Right.
Parental advisory, mm-hmm. MTV. We were looking up to your generation as like, these guys, you guys were in your 20s.
We don't give a shit.
And you guys were cool. Gen X was like, fuck all this shit. Rock and roll needs to be uncensored. Mm-hmm. Rap music needs to be uncensored. And television needs to be uncensored. And I'm a kid and I'm like, fuck yeah. And then I get older and I grew up in Colorado. And, you know, a mass shooting happens. And you go, what a tragedy. Columbine. And then another one happens and you go, was Tipper Gore right?
Yeah,
you go, were all those people that were like, there's too much violence in movies, and you're going like,
yeah,
fuck, I'm on their side.
Yeah,
like you don't want to be on their side, but you're like,
and then you read
fuck.
About like how the School of the Americas trains assassins, and one of the things they desensitize people to violence, they torture animals for them, show them footage of people being killed so that they don't,
and you
you're
go,
like,
and you go, oh no, and it would, I think what would have fast-tracked the thought of maybe they were right is if we found out that mass shooters were doing like Arnold lines where he goes like, sorry, mall's closed, and they're like, he goes,
let off a little steam.
Yeah, they go, did you know that Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold's last words were school's out?
Yeah,
and you go, oh no.
Pencils down. Yeah, it would not
oh,
be
oh no man, this dude. Makes it, this makes it so much worse that they're doing fucking like one little Arnold stingers at the end of their
listen,
tragedies.
I am all for free speech. I could not be more for free speech, but every now and then there's something where I'm like, I'm all for free speech, but I'm also for smart speech. Like Sarah McLachlan, she wrote that song Possession, and a lot of the lyrics, she took them from letters that this obsessed fan was sending to her, a stalker. So she used his lines in the song, and I'm like, is that the best idea? Like,
also, let's just get into the legalities of it.
Right.
Does he have a gripe as a songwriting?
Apparently,
credit?
He did sue her, and it was a whole, and then he ended up killing himself. But it's like, is that this? And then I remember right after the Oklahoma bombing, and you can watch it, there's a trailer for that horrible remake of Day of the Jackal called The Jackal.
Jackal with Bruce Willis, Jack Black.
And it's close-ups of a hand.
Or is that Val Kilmer or Bruce Willis?
No, Bruce Willis and Sidney Poitier and Richard Gere.
Yes.
And Jack Black has a horrific death in that movie.
Yes. With the gun. I know exactly. Yeah.
But so in the trailer, there's like close-ups of the hand. Of hands, his hands like building a bomb and wiring stuff. And the voiceover is, in his own way, he's an artist. And this will be his masterpiece. So it's like,
dude.
Are these the images and lines to put, especially with the way the country is? Is that the best thing to be saying right now? Because people going, I am an artist.
Because the documentary, if you were alive for the Oklahoma City bombing, and
I remember
at the exact same time what was going on was Richard Kuklinski. Mm-hmm. So people were thinking that the Unabomber was the Oklahoma City bomber.
Right.
And then it was like, but you're right. There was this like fever where all anyone wanted to talk about was Oklahoma City bombing.
Yeah.
So there was an exec that was cutting it where the guy, the voiceover guy goes, I can't do this.
Please,
I can't do this.
I don't.
And they go, do it. And he goes, this. This is his art. I mean, I lost a cousin.
Yeah.
My cousin worked in the federal building in Oklahoma City. And this is his masterpiece.
Yeah.
I mean, guys, what the fuck are we doing? Yeah, there is like this.
Do you want to get your deck stained or not?
Yeah.
How do you,
but there is this like sensitivity where you go, maybe we don't do this right now.
Maybe it's not the best. And same with, look, I love Eli Roth. And this probably isn't even Eli's fault. Again, they cut the trailers. You have very little control. But it was right after all of the Trayvon Martin death.
Yeah.
And again, all the students, his remake of Death Wish.
Oh, yeah.
And the trailer is, he's like in a hoodie and I've got to protect what's mine.
Yeah.
And then there's this hot blonde with big boobs. You're locked and loaded, baby. I'm like, these are not the best images to be putting out right now.
Guys, you guys are really putting it's like starting an argument between a drunk couple. Where you go, didn't you forget her at the airport one time? And they go, yeah you fucking did, you bitch. And then they're just in it. And you go, you shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
You're really
just shaking up a jar of red ants. There we go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're just making everyone angry. And there always is like, I'm always amazed at that level of evil, which I don't know if you can call it evil or if you want to call it just pure apathy.
I think it's pure apathy. I think
greed, apathy caused by greed.
Apathy caused by greed. And then the apathy is there to so they can soothe their own greed. They've looked in a mirror and gone, oh, fuck, that's a really evil, greedy ass thing to do. And then so the only way to pretend is like, well, I don't fucking give a shit. Look, this is the businessman.
I'm balling, dude.
Yeah.
I'm balling out.
Or then they'll do this shit where they're like, look, we all do this shit. Like, they try to make it so that everyone is like, no, not everyone is corrupt and shitty as you.
I feel like is the antithesis of how they got so many people in the Epstein shit, where they were just going like, what, man? We all go to the island. Mm. We party. Like, there might be guys that just went to Epstein Island that were like, dude, I did a business deal. They said they would sign the deal if I went to this island.
Listen, go watch or read Serpico. The first thing the corrupt cops do is like, hey, you want some free food? You want to, like, they immediately want
Serpico.
You. Yeah.
That meeting in the park?
The first thing they want to do is get you on the payroll so you can go, now you can't blow a whistle because you're on it too.
That's that meeting in the park with all the other cops. So they go, yeah, dude, we just do this.
Come on, man. You're in.
And by the way.
And the first person that goes, hey, I don't want this, or like, get rid of him.
By the way, comics are no different. We are the most corrupt cops, where they go like this, hey, you should really like, just try to be funny. Try to be real. Try to be yourself. Try to be authentic and make people laugh. And you go, yes, protect and serve. That's all I want to do. And then you see the first guy that goes, I took the bit because I needed it.
Yeah.
He's like smoking a cigarette. He goes, why wouldn't I take the bit? Well, he's not going to use it. He's in fucking New Mexico. So I took it, and I took it to L.A., and you go, oh, that's corrupt. But then they do a small thing where they go, I don't know, I've got a lot of fans. Why don't you come on my podcast? You're like, oh, fuck, man. Oh, fuck, am I compromised?
We could totally.
A dirty cop in 2026.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't want to bring up the Riyadh thing, but we could go down some very bad roads here.
But there really is like a step of like, get a taste.
Come on, man. Don't you want a little...
It's the guy from Montreal. Have a little taste. And you go, oh, yeah.
Look, anyone you've ever respected, they've all had to fucking do it. Don't worry about, you know.
I'm like...
It's like Denzel Washington in Training Day.
Yeah,
listen. You got to do this shit so you can then do the stuff that... Then we can do the stuff that's good.
You have money to tour. Meanwhile, I'm at home like a Chicago cop holding on with my wife. I'm like, don't you understand, Katie? I'm doing jokes about my dead dad. They're out there doing TikTok shit. I don't want to be posted on they're damn influencers acting like caps.
I don't want to talk to the fucking crowd, but it's what everyone's doing now.
I do feel like Dennis Farina.
Yeah.
Just that whole like thing of like
Dennis Farina.
You go, I don't know, what am I doing here? I was a wise guy. They're not wise guys, but there
Have you seen how now whenever Maria Bamford does crowd work, she'll give the person $20 because like, you're working.
That's so great.
You should get money for this. So it's the same as when you go to the store and they have the automatic bagger thing. You're like, are you going to pay me for putting in an hour time doing shit?
I think the sign of Hall of Fame all-time joke is that whenever you do something, you think of someone's bit.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot bag my own groceries without thinking of Bill Burr's joke about the self-checkout line,
mm-hmm.
where he goes, oh, this whole time I thought I was a comedian. Turns out I was late for my shift at the grocery store. And he like does this whole thing. I think of that line every time I'm bagging it, where it's like, oh, yeah, no, I work at the grocery store. It's...
Well, I did a bit, and I stopped doing it because it was so grim, but it was real. I mean, it got laughs, but I got sad doing it. Do you remember when the self-checkout things first came out, and they had the other checkout... the actual checkout people teaching you how to use it, teaching you how to replace them.
Yeah. They go, I'm going to be obsolete.
Yeah, but they made the humans in the store come over and go, this is how I'm out of a job.
They still do that.
Let me show you. Which is the fucking...
It's the most cuck chair shit in the world where they go, you sit right there in your chair.
Yeah.
Watch the computer do it
but
faster.
Like part of you wants to go, no, let me go over to your aisle and let you... No, I don't want you getting replaced.
I will go out of my way.
Please.
I will go out of my way to check out with a human being.
Yeah, me too.
To be like,
I won't use those things. I feel terrible.
Bag of meat. Look at me, bag of meat.
Yeah.
Scan the things that bring me fuel.
It's 5:45. You just put in 8 hours work, and we need you to put in another 20 minutes here at the store.
Because I'm going
to
tell you
By the way,
now,
none of your groceries are going to be cheaper. You get no discount for doing this.
And if I'm going to do that, I'm going to take smoke breaks with the guys that work at the grocery store.
Yeah.
You're going to be like, where were you? There's an aisle. It's backed up.
And I'm going to steal some yogurt pretzels out of the bulk bins like everyone else does.
I mean, my God. I do. Honestly, one of the things I do miss about working a shitty job is... stealing from a place that I thought was fucking me over.
Yes.
It's a good youth thing to go
through.
It's
a very good youth thing to do.
Where you, because you feel like you take a little bit of the power back.
Yeah, a little bit of the...
No matter where you work.
Because you are making someone else money,
mm-hmm.
and you're throwing
Especially
away...
Especially if it's a large corporation. I'm not talking about small businesses.
No, if you're working for... if you're a massive chain...
I worked for Bed Bath & Beyond.
Oh, well,
and this is when I was saving up money to move to New York.
Oh, so that's why they went out of business, because of your shit.
Because I just was in the middle taking those chocolate bars out of the sheets, eating a whole chocolate bar, and then hiding it in like the plastic of a down comforter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know how many people in Tucson, Arizona bought down comforters, went home and took it out of the bag and found a lint wrapper?
Like
stuffed in the thing where they were like, why is there a chocolate wrapper? Like they thought they were Charlie the Chocolate Factory. They're like, why is there a chocolate wrapper? Just because 21-year-old me was just eating chocolate and then shoving it in there.
The Arizona Chocolate Phantom. I can't believe I'm talking to him. Wow. I always thought it was an urban myth. Apparently it's real.
The Arizona Chocolate Phantom. If that's not the real in this episode, I'm never podcasting again. Dude, I can't tell you how much this meant that you were able to change your schedule and come to hang out.
I was glad you were, because my schedule got fucked today, so this is great,
man.
No, man,
you are an all-timer, one of my favorite comedians. I said this to you when we hung out in Grand Rapids with Brendan Sagalow.
That's right.
Which was very fun, and also Sagalow didn't want to do this, but you're his favorite comedian. And
really?
He was just like the whole time like, dude, this is surreal. You did a guest spot when we were at Dr. Grin's.
And I stayed and watched your set, and it was fucking so goddamn hilarious.
I really appreciate that.
It was so chaotic and real, and it was like the... I don't want to gush too much, but it was one of those things where... I mean, I did a guest set. I did very well.
Yeah, fuck
but
yeah.
Then you came in, and it was you and the audience clicked on this other level, and I just kind of sat back and went, oh, here we go. And it was so fucking great.
I'm going to have you cut that exact piece. I'm going to play that when I'm on a plane fucking sliding mentally.
Oh, here we go.
But, as I told you in Grand Rapids, truly your HBO one night stand, yours and Dave Chappelle's are truly the reason. Same season.
That's right.
I can still quote most of the half hours, both yours and Dave's. I could do the whole Nick Nolte as Han Solo. I can do the whole Cops bit. I can do Piss Drinkers, Inc., as I said earlier.
Wow.
But truly, set me on my way to doing stand-up because I watched you and Dave Chappelle and I was like, well, I want to do that.
Thanks,
like,
man.
I remember that. So just the fact that you went and hung out and how cool of a guy you are means the world to me. This is like the best.
Thanks,
Patton
man.
Oswalt, the special, June 9th on...
on YouTube, on you can get it now. Yeah. Gorilla Plus Comedy, new streaming app, has all your favorites on it. Me, David Cross, everyone's on there.
Yeah.
But then on June 9th, it'll be on YouTube.
That's, I'm telling you right now, the thing about YouTube specials that's great is when people hear that, they go, I have access to that.
You can just watch it right now.
You just watch it right fucking now.
Watch
you don't
on your
need
phone.
To go sign up for anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's fucking great. Well, check out a special, June 9th. This rules. You rule.
Thank you. Thanks, man.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.